You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we're nearing the end of the window to enroll in health insurance through the Affordable Care Act marketplace. A health insurance expert joins us to help navigate the open enrollment process. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a pro athlete who recently moved back to Wisconsin.
Janelle McCarville's WNBA career included plenty of highlights, including a championship in 2013. The 6'2" center also played internationally in Italy, China, and Sweden. Her playing career came to an end in 2022, but then she returned to her hometown in Wisconsin. She wound up coaching high school girls basketball in Stevens Point and is now living in the same house she grew up in. WPR's Rob Menser talked with McCarville about her life as a pro athlete.
Bring it in and let's get going, all right?
Knock three, one, two, three, smash.
My name is Janelle McCarville. I am the head coach of the Stevens Point Area Senior High Girls Basketball Team. This is my first year as head coach. I have played professionally in the WNBA for 9 years. I've played overseas for 15 years with numerous championships in numerous countries.
Here you go, next group.
I grew up in Custer, Wisconsin, two bars and a post office. Went to Stevens Point High School. I had so much support from the family and cousins that I don't think I would have made it without them. But I was a farm kid, you know, so like it was just action on the farm, playing with the brothers. I enjoyed soccer, so the U.S. Olympic team had won the World Cup. I remember where I was when they won it. I think Brandi Chastain hit the penalty kick, took her shirt off, waved it around her head. You know, first time female had ever done that. It was almost, you know, indecent exposure for certain people at the time. But, oh my God, as a young female athlete, that was my role model right there. The U.S. Olympic team, soccer team.
Bring it back!
Basketball is the last thing I picked up, truly. I really only started in 7th or 8th grade. You know, if you were into something, you had to be into it because mom had to sacrifice all the time to drive you to town, waste, you know, 2 hours waiting for you in town. So we really had to buckle down.
Set it back up with whoever drove and whoever was behind.
Then went to University of Minnesota. I was the only person that year as a freshman. They only recruited me. I dominated. I won freshman of the year in the Big Ten. And from that year on, we never had a losing season in Minnesota.
McCarville, one-on-one, goes right around the corner and lays it in.
That's big time. I mean, this young woman has been the best player in the NCAA tournament. She has been sensational.
The WNBA was there, but not so popular or well-known. A European basketball career was never even thought of. You know, I didn't know anything of it. So I was just hoping I could, you know, continue because for the love of the game. Going into the draft, I didn't know anything. So me and my family, mother and father, went to New York to be in the draft. And draft day, you know, I'm just sitting in the room with everybody else, and all of a sudden they call your name. And it just so happened I was number one. I was taken to Charlotte, the Charlotte Sting.
Comes up with, look at this play.
Oh my goodness, Janelle McCarville, that'll be the best play she makes all season long.
And probably the best play that we'll see all day today.
Yep. Everything grew as I got older. I just learned, I improved mind, body, and soul as to what needed to happen, and it created habits. You know, 21 days makes a habit, and you do these things long enough, it just becomes part of your life. And I guess that's where I am today and why I've been so successful is I dove headfirst and gave everything my best.
Ready? Go!
We won the WNBA championship in 2013 with the Minnesota Lynx. It was one of the most trying years of my life, actually. Coaches push you to the brink, and this year, it was the beginning of that. I don't know. You have your lifelong dream of winning a championship, and the only thing I did, partied with the girls, and went back to the room and watched film. You know, I was like ready to do it all over again. I'm not satisfied with just this one. So then, you know, already thinking about next year and taking the other one and the preparation that's needed for it. So it's hard to live in the moment.
Hello, everybody. Please have a seat. Welcome to the White House and give it up for our special guest, the Minnesota Lynx. Hey.
So I got to go meet Barack Obama. You know, he shook my hand and said, oh, Janelle, I love your passes. You know, like, holy shit, the President of the United States knows my name and knows what I excel at. You know, like, that's crazy to me. Like, then again, it hits home, like, wow, I've come a long way and done a lot of things, and basketball has truly provided all of it.
WPR's Rob Menser brought us that story on basketball player and coach Janelle McCarville, a Wisconsin native. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Now, the deadlines to enroll in health insurance through Medicare or the Affordable Care Act Marketplace are approaching. There are a lot of different wrinkles, so how can we make sure we find the plan that's right for us? A health insurance enrollment expert is here to help us navigate the waters of open enrollment and help you choose the right plan and provider for your situation. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you shopping? Are you going through this process right now? What questions do you have about it? If you've gone through open enrollment, either through the Medicare plan or through the Affordable Care Act, what did you find confusing or difficult? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Sadie Tischer is the owner and an independent broker with Wisconsin Health Insurance Advocate, LLC. Sadie, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob.
Well, a couple different deadlines coming up. I want to start with the one that's coming up sooner. Hopefully people have this in the works now. Just a few days for people who are changing parts of their coverage under Medicare. Now, this is what people call Medicare Advantage and the drug coverage. What is at play for people who are currently Medicare recipients?
So, yes, for anyone who is on or wishes to be on a Medicare Advantage plan or a prescription drug only plan, the deadline to switch for 2024 is this Thursday, December 7th.
How do people do that? And I guess do it in an expedited way because they just have a few days left.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a lot of independent brokers in every community that can help people through that process. There's also the state health insurance program, the SHIP helpline. And then people can also call 1-800-MEDICARE. I would advise people if they are calling the 1-800 number, just to be really clear about what providers are in network, because those call center folks from Medicare just won't be as familiar with our local providers. So I would just urge people to be specific about their doctors if they do call the 1-800 number.
Now, some people might have a Medicare Part A, that's the hospital part, as I understand it, Part B, medical insurance. What goes into the decision of, you know, do I need to get the Medicare Advantage on top of that?
Sure. So yeah, some people have original Medicare Part A and B with or without a supplement plan. And those are folks who often add just a prescription drug plan on it so that they have some prescription drug coverage. People who want to take sort of an alternative route can consider a Medicare Advantage plan. So a Medicare Advantage plan is basically a way to privatize your Medicare. So it's run through a private insurance company. Typically, you do have to go within a network, but there are some basic exemptions for that. And it's a way of changing how you pay for your Medicare. So most Medicare Advantage plans have set co-pays for services versus original Medicare, which has some deductibles. And then typically you pay 20% after that.
Talking to Sadie Tischer with Wisconsin Health Insurance Advocate, LLC, looking at enrollment for Medicare Advantage and drug programs. And coming up, Marketplace, Affordable Care Act Marketplace. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Sadie, I think when a lot of people are seeing headlines about open enrollment this time of year, it's the Affordable Care Act Marketplace. First of all, who should care? Who should be paying attention to the Affordable Care Act Marketplace?
Sure. People who should pay attention to the Affordable Care Act or Marketplace are people who don't have access to insurance through another source. So people who don't get Medicare, Medicaid, or insurance through work or a parent's plan, people who buy insurance on their own, basically.
And there is a category of people who may be surprised. Medicaid has had this process over the last few years because of the pandemic where you didn't, as I understand it, Sadie, you didn't need to re-enroll. You didn't need to reprove your eligibility. That's done. There's this process called the unwinding now. What should people watch for if they had been on Medicaid for a while? That's wrapping up, and maybe now it's time to check out that marketplace.
Absolutely. Great point. So Medicaid coverage did auto-renew for people. They weren't checking income. So all of this year since June, we've been seeing people having reviews. As I understand it, goes through March. So many people have been reviewed, but there are still some who need to be reviewed. So keep an eye on your mail for people who have Medicaid and you have not yet gotten a review. I'd really encourage you to check out your access. So that's access, A ccess.wi.gov. There you can check the status of your Medicaid and your renewal date. So people want to pay good attention to that because Medicaid typically just sends one renewal notice out to folks. They'll send a notice if a person has lapsed, but you really prefer to do that review before you've lapsed. So if you haven't gotten a notice, it's probably a good idea at this point to check when your renewal date might be.
Now, there's two things people might be thinking about with the marketplace. Well, there's a lot of things, but two upfront things. One, am I eligible at all to join in? And two, people might look at the monthly cost and say, I can't afford that. Well, there's another eligibility. There are subsidies, more generous subsidies got extended at least through 2025, I think, under an act of Congress a couple years back. Can you talk about subsidies and who might be eligible for those for coverage under the marketplace?
Great question. Yes. So the American Recovery Act plan did extend subsidies, but then the Inflation Reduction Act, which was passed last year, actually extended those subsidies through 2026. So we will see cost savings at least until 2026. And what's really great is that we are now capped, individuals are now capped at 8.5% of their income for the second silver plan. So they may end up paying more than that if they choose a different plan. But as they go second silver or lower, that they are capped at 8.5%. So a lot of people are qualifying for some sort of subsidy on the marketplace that we really haven't seen in prior years prior to the ARPA passing. It's really exciting. It's been a cost savings. Insurance is still quite expensive. We just know this is true in every single sector, but some people can get a good plan for an affordable price.
We're talking to Sadie Tischer, owner and independent broker with Wisconsin Health Insurance Advocate, LLC. She's giving us tips on choosing and enrolling in the right health insurance before the end of open enrollment. Talk a little bit about Medicare's open enrollment, just a few days left on that. And now talking about the Affordable Care Act marketplace. You got a few more weeks on that one. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you weighing your options right now? Are you confused about bronze versus silver versus gold versus platinum? Do you have questions about how to shop for this? Or maybe you've got a loved one who you think might be eligible. What do you want to know that they need to know? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Sadie Tischer, owner and independent broker with Wisconsin Health Insurance Advocate, LLC, talking about how to enroll in health insurance through Medicare or the Affordable Care Act marketplace before upcoming deadlines. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you receiving coverage through the marketplace? How has it worked for you? Was it tricky to figure out if you were eligible for subsidies? Do you have questions about how and whether to make changes or to sign up in the first place? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Jim is with us in Cedarburg. Jim, hi.
Thanks, Rob. Good show as always. My question is about the Affordable Care Act. Signing up, they look at income. Now, does that just constitute, is it just made up of wages, or is it things like trust disbursements? And is it what, based off of 2022 W-2s, or I mean, not W-2s, but 1040s? Can you talk about that? Thanks.
Jim, thanks for the call. What income counts and what year's income counts when we're applying for the Affordable Care Act marketplace and possible subsidies, Sadie?
Yes. So it is your projected taxable income. So typically we want to use what you expect to receive for the year that you are applying. So most people that we're helping right now, we are asking, what do you think your 2024 income will be? For a lot of people, they can use their 2023 income as a guidance, but we are actually projecting forward. And what counts is taxable income. So ultimately you want the amount that you put on the marketplace income box to match what you file on your tax return. There's a bit of wiggle room. So the tax credit can go up or down based on how accurate you were. And essentially you either pay more on taxes or you get some back if you weren't perfectly accurate. So we don't harp on people about being perfectly accurate. We just want to get to your best possible estimate.
Thanks a lot for the call, Jim. Matt is with us now in Milwaukee. Matt, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to ask about?
I had a question. So I've been using the Affordable Care Act for a number of years now, and one of the problems I've ran into is there seem to be a multitude of different plan options. You know, for example, you know, one company will have silver plan, you know, we'll just say A, B, C, D, E, and F, and they all look very similar with minute differences. So I've always had trouble kind of navigating through those, seeing which plan is best fit for me. And what I've ended up doing is making up an Excel sheet and then just plugging in all the numbers of my medications and then the different plan coverages, you know, and that's 2 or 3 hours of me just punching in numbers sometimes to find out what plan works best for me, which I think is pretty much excessive for, you know, most people,
Matt,
to do. So I have a hard.
Thanks a lot for the call. Matt, bring us up a great point, Sadie. There's different kinds of silver plans. There's also bronze, silver, gold, platinum, and so on. How can someone looking at this compare what in some cases might look like apples and oranges to figure out what's going to be the best marketplace coverage for them?
Yes. And Matt, I could not agree more. There are, just for an example, Milwaukee County, where I reside, we have 112 plans. It is an excessive amount of plans. The differences can look extremely minor. What differences we actually see are between companies, and not just in price, but in network. So the first thing I really suggest is that people check the network that they're going into. We have some big carriers this year, United Healthcare, Anthem, for example. Those are some bigger names. Don't assume that the network is wide because there's a big company name. You always want to check the network. And then, Matt, you are going definitely above and beyond. Mm-hmm. I wish everyone had the time and capability to do that. But I agree, there are minor differences, and they have flooded us with plans.
Matt, thanks a lot for the call. Can you give a couple quick clarifications? I think a lot of people want to compare is, you know, the deductibles on one plan for another versus the copays for one plan for another, and then the premiums, how do those all tend to balance out?
Yes. So I think what you want to do as an individual is look at what you are most likely to use. So for example, if you know you have a couple of doctor's appointments during the year or even multiple doctor's appointments, be careful to look for a plan that you have a doctor copay before the deductible applies. We sometimes are finding that specialist copays are subject to the deductible, and that can really catch people off guard. So before you sign up for any plan, look at the summary of benefits that is available in any of our major quotes software that agents use, Navigate, anyone else. If you use it yourself on healthcare.gov, look carefully at the summary of benefits before you click that enroll button. And just do what Matt did, in at least an easier sense of going through what do you think you're likely to use, what is the cost, and the major question is it subject to the deductible or not? Because some of those deductibles are incredibly high.
Thanks again for that call, Matt. We'll go to Jim now in Black River Falls. Jim, hi.
Yo, hi. I have an enrollment period question.
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
For some reason, the enrollment period is just 3 months at the end of the year. But if you lose your job, I have a family member who's going to lose his job in probably April. The employer is closing business. Is that grounds to enroll at that time?
Jim, thanks for the call. Sadie, I know there are some exceptions to the open enrollment period. Some kind of major change. Does losing one's job count as something that lets you enroll outside of that period?
Yes. When you lose some sort of other qualifying coverage, Medicare, Medicaid, or job-based insurance, you have a 60-day window in which to enroll in coverage. You want to be sure to do that as soon as you can, because coverage never goes backwards. It always starts the first of the following month. So yes, your family member will have a special enrollment period. When they know they're losing coverage, they can actually apply up to 60 days before that loss of coverage. This open enrollment period, which is actually only a month and a half, 45 very stressful days for us brokers. This just applies to people who already have the marketplace and need to renew their coverage.
Jim, thanks a lot for that call. John is with us now in Marinette. John, hi.
How are you doing? I got I'm 74 years old. I've been on Medicare for some, well, at least 10, 12 years or something. But I'd like to get a supplemental something, but I don't trust anybody. I've been taken advantage of on online stuff so many times, and every time that I even inquire about it, I'll start getting 18, 20, 22 calls a day from insurance agents. And so I just delete them. You know?
John, I gotcha. Sadie, if somebody wants a good Medicare, say, Advantage plan, what's a good, reliable way to, John is worried about being ripped off just in our last half a minute or so.
Sure. Well, of course, I'm biased because I'm an independent broker, but I would suggest that people visit a local independent broker with a physical location of some sort, someone you can actually meet face to face. The other option would be you could call your county's Department on Aging or Aging and Disability Resource Center. They're elder benefit specialists, disability benefit specialists there who, if they can't help guide you, they usually have a resource for someone local that they know. So use a local resource. And for everyone on any health insurance topic, do not ever put your phone number or out on an internet information contact page. You will get berated with calls for the rest of your life. So
John,
be really careful.
Thanks a lot for the call. And Sadie, we'll let you get back to your busy season now.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Sadie Tischer, owner and independent broker with Wisconsin Health Insurance Advocate, LLC. Talk to her about how to navigate health insurance, open enrollment through Medicare or the Affordable Care Act marketplace. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, being single doesn't mean being sad or lonely, according to the author of the new book, Single at Heart, which digs into stories and data behind decisions to remain unmarried, unpartnered, and happy. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, a Wisconsin-based personal finance expert helps us prepare for budget talk as the holidays approach and gives advice on how to reframe the way we talk and think about money. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. While a lot of good stuff can come along with holiday get-togethers, here's one holiday tradition most of us could do without: awkward conversations with family about difficult topics like politics, religion, lifestyle, and money. Common attitudes about personal finances can put a lot of pressure on people with consumer debt, a low credit score, or minimum wage income. Our next guest says it's time to flip the script and find a new way to talk about money and budgeting. She recently wrote a newsletter about how to have those tough conversations as the holidays approach. You could join in at 800-642-1234. How do you navigate conversations about money and finances over the holidays? Do you have questions about how to steer the conversation in a positive direction or advice to share yourself? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Dana Miranda is a certified educator in personal finance and author of Healthy Rich, a newsletter for inclusive, budget-free financial education. Dana, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Before we get to the holiday table, I want to talk about your approach to personal finance a little bit. A lot of personal finance is geared toward, you know, people with some finances to manage. Could you talk a little bit about the approach you take with Healthy Rich?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's for everyone, sort of regardless of your income. But I definitely speak to people that the personal finance industry tends to ignore, which is, like you said, kind of assuming that people have extra income to work with. So I take what I call a budget-free approach to managing money. And it's basically a rejection of what I call budget culture, which is the dominant approach to money in our culture that's rooted in restricting how we spend, putting a lot of shame on our financial decisions, and aiming for wealth as the goal above anything else.
That may take a lot of people aback. There's a lot of pressure out there to say, you know, budget your money, manage everything you spend. That's the road to not overspending, first of all, and to saving money for the future. Why do you see a problem with that kind of budget-centered mindset?
So I recommend the budget-free approach as a way of rejecting that act of budgeting itself, because it's a step in rejecting those ways that we're teaching and talking and thinking about money in our culture that we learn through budget culture that kind of encompasses what I see as budget culture. And that's in particular and really relevant to the conversation that we're having today is because it encourages that shame that hurts us as individuals, but it goes a lot deeper than that because it teaches us to place blame and shame on individuals and treat money as solely an individual issue that we're each responsible for and causes us to ignore the systemic forces that impact our financial circumstances.
And part of what you're looking for, as I read your newsletter anyway, is to try to remove some of the stress we feel around money, whatever income level we happen to be at. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I think that money management and thinking about money should be something that's easy. It shouldn't be something that takes up a lot of time in our day. It shouldn't be something that causes stress anytime we want to make any kind of decision because money sort of folds into any sort of decision that we make. And I see a lot of personal finance advice, especially around things like budgeting and spend tracking, that actually add more work and stress to your money management. So the approach that I recommend is always to think about money less. Think about it as little as you can throughout your day and let money just sort of be a part of your life as it kind of naturally is in the way that our society is organized.
Again, before we move to the holiday table, people might think, well, I don't seem to have enough money. I want to try to get a handle on it. As opposed to reaching for that, you know, budget app or whatever, what would you suggest they do with that as their starting point?
At that point, I would start with the mindset work of a budget-free approach, which is to start with thinking about your relationship with money. So a lot of times when people say they don't have enough money, if you step back and think about your relationship with money, a lot of what people are experiencing, again, is some of that shame and restriction that comes from budget culture. So maybe they're feeling like they don't have enough money to spend on the things that they want because they're using it in ways that education or personal finance gurus or just culture in general is telling them they should be using it. And so they're feeling that restriction, or maybe they're feeling shame because of decisions they've made or because of debt they've taken on or because of the amount of money that they're earning. But just making that mindset shift can be an accessible way for anyone to improve their relationship with money without making any of the changes to maybe your income or spending. That would sort of be the next steps based on what that mindset shift teaches you.
Talking to Dana Miranda, certified educator in personal finance, author of the newsletter Healthy Rich. We're talking about how to handle difficult conversations, maybe at a holiday get together when money and finances come up. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Is this something you encounter maybe at your family get-togethers in one way or another? The number is 800-642-1234 to share your experiences, your questions for our guest. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@wpr.org. Dana, let's bring things to that get-together. What kind of toxic money conversations do you see people encountering maybe at that family get-together?
So it's a lot of what I see in budget culture and the ways that we talk about money in general, because our sort of cultural approach to money is kind of accepted as the norm, as that's kind of what calling it a culture implies. And so a lot of things get brought up, especially in families when there's that extra stress and kind of expectations involved. But people throw out things about money without really questioning how it's impacting the people around them and how it's a an expression of that greater culture and kind of what the implications of that are. So there's a lot of talk around the holidays of how expensive the holidays are in general, how expensive gifts are, a lot of talk about prices, and that can bring up all of those kinds of feelings about money. Again, that depending on how somebody's talking about it, it could really imply a need for restriction. There could be debt shaming involved, depending on how you're spending around the holidays and how that's impacting your finances. And there can be sort of this implied kind of expectation about how you're supposed to use your money and how you kind of should have prepared your finances for the holidays. And if you're not in that position, that could be a really tough conversation to have.
And you mentioned expectations. The first thing on your list is manage expectations at the holiday get together. And this could be true for difficult conversations where money comes up or just about anything at that holiday gathering. How do we set that expectation level?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're completely right. This doesn't apply just to money conversations. It's anything. The number one piece of advice I've heard, and I don't remember the first source, but this is not mine, but it's to remind yourself that grandma's gonna grandma. And it's a really easy thing to remember. So I like to throw it out there. You can put anybody's name in there. So like Aunt Joan is gonna Aunt Joan. Swap in whoever it is that you're dealing with at a family or holiday gathering. It just means that you can't change who these people are. We're assuming that you're spending the holidays with them because you love them, because you enjoy their company. And so there are things about them that you love with everybody that you know, and especially with family who you know so well and you're so close to. There are going to be things that get on your nerves a little bit, that irk you a little bit. And you just have to know that those things are going to exist. Don't go in because you've spent the year learning and sort of changing your relationship with money and learning about economics and finances, that you're going to, go into this and hope that everyone else is going to be talking about money in a different way. Go into it knowing that they are who they are, so that you know what to expect, so that you can have reasonable expectations and prepare in advance.
One possible awkward interaction might be, and this may come up in some families or groups of friends, why are you still working that job where you don't make much money? Or some kind of judgment along those lines. How do you handle that kind of conversation?
With anything with a job, I think, again, know sort of what to expect going in, especially for people who have sort of trouble thinking on their feet or just having conversations with people in general. Think about what the critiques might be, and then really, ask yourself where you are with that. So for me, if somebody is critiquing my job, I tend to choose my jobs based on the interest that I have in them, the joy I get out of them, much more than the paycheck. And so I always focus on that, that I just say, I'm really enjoying the work that I do, and here's why. And just keep the conversation there, keep it focused on that, rather than feeding into their expectation of what your income should be. You don't have to respond to, how you're making ends meet despite that income. You don't have to play into suggestions of different jobs or anything if that's not what you're looking for. Just focus on why something is working for you and keep the conversation there.
Dana Miranda is with us, Wisconsin-based certified educator in personal finance, author of Healthy Rich, a newsletter that takes an inclusive approach to personal finance. She's with us to talk about navigating tricky conversations about money during the holiday season, especially if you've taken a different approach to managing money, to budgeting maybe, than others in your family. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What does money talk look like, if it comes up at all, at family gatherings? Maybe something you encountered over Thanksgiving or worry about coming up on the Christmas and other holidays. Is this a source of tension in your family, or is it avoided altogether? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up the conversation with Wisconsin personal finance writer Dana Miranda about how to prepare yourself for holiday budget talk, with talking points even for those difficult conversations about money. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is this something that comes up for you at family gatherings, maybe over the holidays? Does some version of money talk spoil the get-togethers for you in one way or another? Do you have experiences or questions to share? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Marcus joins us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hey, Rob. So my great uncle Don, when he was alive, he used to take, and at holidays, he told us, he said, you know, and just in life in general, you need to separate your wants from your needs. You should always cover your needs and occasionally cover things you want. And he said that even applies to us at Christmas. And so rather than just, because we'd have our list of toys and whatever else that we wanted, and he was trying to teach us a larger lesson. And he said, you know, like, I'm going to give you something that you need, even though you don't know you need it. And so he would take us out, and we'd go out into the country, and he'd teach us about nature, about different types of trees, ash, you know, aspen, pine, whatever. And basically what he was trying to instill in us is that, you know, the money covers the wants and some of the wants and the needs, but the wealth that he was giving us was the knowledge, understanding, and just a whole different perspective for the rest of our lives. And it has done me a good stead. And I can't express this enough. It shouldn't be about the dollars for a toy, because that's short-lived. Memories, though, it stays with everybody who's involved in that activity.
Marcus, thanks a lot for the call. A couple things there, Dana. First of all, that nature trip, for example, focusing on really a non-financial good in a lot of ways, a shared experience, exposure to nature, things like that.
Absolutely. I love the message that the wealth that they were receiving was the wealth of knowledge. And I think that that is something that gets completely ignored in personal finance, is the different types of wealth in our life. And the much more fulfilling for many people, the much more fulfilling types of wealth to pursue than dollars in a bank account or dollars in an investment account. Those experiences and those shared connections are really important, and you can't put a dollar amount on them. Sometimes achieving them does cost money, like owning the land to have access to go out and look at the trees, or traveling to be with your family at the holidays, or having the technology to connect with them or something. You do have to put money into that and have that kind of access. But like, because like I said, money, you know, just gets folded into every part of your life. But if you can really listen to yourself deep down and understand what is the true thing that you're trying to get out of that experience, I think you can come up with something much richer than a certain dollar amount.
Thanks a lot for the call, Marcus. We'll go to Chad now in Sauk City. Chad, hello.
Hi, this is Chad. How's it going?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Chad?
I was listening to the conversation, and I feel like idea of being stressed about money is something people with less money or people that manage their money poorly should be stressed about, because money equals freedom. And the more money you have, I mean, I've lived very, very with less income, and then I've made lots of income. And the more income I make, the less I have to think about money. But the less income, you got to budget a little bit more closely. And I just think that you're selling a bad idea to people if you're saying, oh, it's don't worry about it. It's either make more money or budget more tightly. That's my two cents.
Chad, thanks a lot for the call. Dana?
I do hear this a lot in conversations about budget culture. And I think that Chad actually did a really good job of sort of exemplifying what I see in budget culture, which is this idea that this very individualized idea that every individual person is responsible for their financial circumstances. And so if you have less money, that you should in effect have less of an experience. And if you have more money, then you are entitled to more of an experience. And that in reality, there are some things that if you have access to fewer resources, there you do have to do a lot more work to make the decisions that you want to make in life, because your money is tighter and it's more difficult to do those things. But the approaching it in this way and recommending that the step that someone should take is to either earn more money or to budget, which is essentially to spend less money in most cases, ignores any systemic or cultural or social forces that put someone in that situation. And so I like to pull back and take an approach that allows people to see how our systems work and to see how those systems are impacting their financial situation so that they can make decisions within that system with the reality of how they're living within that system, and not just take advice from people who have been able to succeed within that system because the system was built for those people to succeed.
Chad, thanks for the call. Talking to Dana Miranda, author of the newsletter Healthy Rich, which aims at inclusive, budget-free financial education. Getting back to our holiday get-togethers, another recommendation you have is going, if you know certain things are going to come up, going in with some canned responses at the ready. What kind of things do you suggest having in our back pockets?
Yeah, absolutely. So in general, I think a good sort of rule of thumb when you're dealing with conflict in a conversation with someone is that kind of old psychological advice of focusing on I statements. And so focusing on how you feel and what you think, rather than taking the bait to get into an argument or letting somebody steer you in a direction that doesn't make sense for you. So if somebody is talking about, like I mentioned earlier, how expensive the holidays are, or they're talking about holiday spending in general, if you're taking a budget-free approach, I recommend something along the lines of, I'm focusing on gratitude this holiday season. I'm not depriving myself, just sort of suggesting I don't support restriction. I don't have that in my life. And for judgments of your purchases, which you might hear judgments of someone else's purchases, or you might hear somebody talking in the same way that we do about food, sort of putting judgment on their own purchases. Just mention, you know, I've been learning about this a lot lately. I've been learning about personal finance, or I've been learning about my relationship with money. And I'm trying not to think of spending as good or bad. I'm just enjoying the experience. Again, focusing on gratitude this holiday season.
One of our callers who couldn't stay on the line mentioned the topic of shame, and maybe shame being a good way to motivate us to stay within our means, to manage our budgets. And I keep hearing in a lot of different fields, and you mentioned weight loss as another one, Dana, shame being kind of a counterproductive tool to the ends we want to meet. Can you talk about that a little?
Absolutely. You're completely right. I don't have a study in front of me, but studies after study has shown that shame is not a good motivator for people. Studies have also shown that restriction doesn't work. There's a lot of that in weight loss science and in dieting, but we're seeing it a little bit more in budgeting too, that that kind of restriction and shame just doesn't work, especially in the long term, but even in the short term, people are not, it's not helping people achieve financial goals. It's really just making people feel worse about themselves. And the most likely outcome is just that they'll go into hiding and be less likely to share their situation with the people who are shaming them.
Dana, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Dana Miranda, Wisconsin-based certified educator in personal finance, author of Healthy Rich, a newsletter for inclusive financial education. She is with us to share some strategies for changing the way we talk about money during the holidays. Remember, you can follow these conversations all the time, anytime, online at WPR.org, or you can download the Wisconsin Public Radio app for live streaming and archived material as well. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to The Ideas Network.